give it a me. If you resist, you're a terrorist team. I'll take everything you got, my way of setting you free. They quell objectioners.
Ordinary Miracles. If you're at your computer, you can just go right on and see that we are Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Of course, that's obvious, isn't it?
Well, they might be on the other side of the world, and it could be 4 in the morning.
Do you know, that's true. When they talk about hookups, we could be in India, we could be in Peru. Good thing English is a very well-known
Didn't you say we have a fan in India?
Did I say that? Okay, probably at least one.
Okay. All right, let's get the commercial out of the way.
All right.
Jan, you can go first.
Okay, Matt and I, when we got together, we do similar work. We believe in sound, in all the ways that it can heal. I, with my background in nursing, believe that it is the medicine of the future, that it's leading for physical healing and also is at the forefront for the ascension on a personal, individual basis, as well as planetary ascension.
Can I interject?
Absolutely.
When you're talking about sound as healing for the future, mm-hmm. Now sound healing has been around for over 2,500 years that I know of, but are you implying that maybe frequency work or sound work will replace surgery and pharmaceuticals and things like that in the future?
Well, right now, they go in with the supersonic little pulsing, and they can break up gallstones. They can do some surgeries. They can do ultrasound to look at, you know, infants and use those technologies. But what I'm talking about is very forward-thinking, but yet not so forward-thinking. The tools that you and I use can diagnose the frequencies in the body, and that can be looked at with the physical symptoms, and they exactly match. And we can energetically rebalance the body using the frequencies, using computers, different modalities. But what I see coming, and is already in the horizons, chambers of sound, light, and color. 2 years ago, I wrote a fun futuristic article, but in fact, it is what is being created. You walk into a special space that has walls that are of sacred geometry, like the phi ratio, that automatically you feel very harmonious. That is relaxing. You're breathing, and your brain waves change. You may be drenched with the color blue if you're diagnosed that you are lacking that within your. Actually, we are rainbow bodies. We are frequency of sound, light, and color. So we'll have sound coming through, pulse tones. It'll all be monitored, brain waves, breathing, heartbeat. And that we'll be able to stabilize and enhance people's all-over functioning.
Okay, well, now let's talk about what you're actually doing today with Voice Bio.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I'm Jan Stracone, and my website is musicforjoyandhealing.com. The program that I use teaches me that singing really does heal. Just by speaking in your regular speaking voice, you are actually making audible all of the sounds within your body, the bones, your nervous system, even emotional matrices, which then can be plotted on a graph by your computer, which comes out to be a bell curve. And we are able to then take a look and see if you have financial fears, your codependency. All these things can be identified now. It's phenomenal.
I'm imagining the gurgling of my stomach.
That would be a G-sharp. It would be some issues of hyper-energy. And what did you have for dinner, Matt? Let's talk.
Chinese food.
Oh, there you go. There you go. So many of us are finding that if our bodies are energy, good energy in, good energy out, and vice versa, and we can actually track how well you're doing digesting your food by the neurotransmitter readings. When you break down your food really properly, that energy can then get to your brain for sustained energy. So it's all there through your voice to diagnose. And then, of course, to rebalance it as simple as singing, which the FDA cannot go after us for singing.
Well, that's cool.
At this point.
Well, I suppose if you claim to be healing by singing, the FDA might look askance at
that. I'd say, let's just sing a joyful F, you know.
Okay. All right, well, so Jan deals with the physiological spectrum as it relates to sound and interpreting the frequencies of the voice in that context. And I work on the emotional side and the fact that there is a connection between muscle and memory. I think I can say fact. And that muscle affects the voice. So as the memory affects the muscle, when the brain is thinking of something, then the muscle affects the voice. And that shows up in a visual voice map with 12 sectors of different emotional values to it. And the real work is done by them taking those frequencies from the client and then feeding them back to them in a biofeedback process, which allows them to unlock buried subconscious stress and trauma that's still affecting them. And that's the simple explanation. If you can go to mattkramer.com, if you're looking at our website, you can see how my name is spelled, and you'll see voice mapping, and you can learn more about it. Send me an email. So how's that for our commercial for tonight?
Well, I think that about wrap it up. What I'll say is those that are interested in sound healing can go to voicebio.com to take a look at my program. And there will be a national conference put on by the Globe Recording Institute at the Clarion Hotel in San Francisco. And that's coming up shortly in May. And you can see it all at the soundhealingcenter.com. Go right to the conference there.
So those of you listening in India and South America, I think you have time to get your tickets together.
Yeah, you missed the early bird special, but...
All right, in a few minutes, we're going to bring on our guest, Terry Daniel. And before we bring Terry on, Jan, you wanted to talk about the best and worst things that happened in your life, right? Or this week.
Well...
This is a weekly ritual. We still redefine this little thing.
Let's take a look at the list here. It was my birthday, and I'd have to say I was lavishly attended by a very, very nice male. But more important, I put out an email at the last minute to different friends, would you like to meet at the canteen in downtown Santa Rosa for a Mexican dinner? One friend drove 4 hours. One friend drove 3 hours. I just was astounded, and I said, this is community. This is love in action. I'm sorry gas is so expensive. But, in fact, that is the fabric and glue of a society, that level of caring, a family, community. These are my sound healing friends, people who work with energy, who I support and love. So that was a huge highlight. That's like the highlight of the month.
Year, I'd say.
Year. Let's see, the worst thing that happened. Let me think about that while you talk about your best thing.
Okay. And I struggle with coming up with a worst thing. I think I'm going to have two best things because I had some great things happen this week. One, was it Friday night? Yeah. I'm a photographer for what I call one of the poorest little nonprofits I know, California Homemakers Association. And they represent domestic workers. And this is a group of people who don't get very much representation, don't have any political clout. But this is a really sweet organization that helps them with food, with medical needs, with legal representation and things like that. And Amy's Kitchen donated 9,000 organic pizzas.
Oh.
So I volunteer as a photographer when they have events. I got a call from the director, Brandon, saying, we need somebody at this parking lot in Santa Rosa at 10 o'clock Friday night to document the delivery and the dispensation of these pizzas. And so that was really fun. And people were taking home, like, you know, 15, 20 frozen pizzas. It'll feed them for a while.
Those are good pizzas, too.
They are good
pizzas.
Organic,
fabulous. Amy's right here in Santa Rosa, California.
And then 24 hours later, exactly, was the second fun thing of the week. I live in a co-housing community called Frog Song. And we have an entertainment committee that comes up with interesting ideas every so often. It's like, okay, we've been working hard. Let's start partying.
Get creative.
So Saturday night was the 50s lounge party.
No.
So people came dressed in 50s drag and 50s finger food. So, like, you know, Cheese Whiz on Ritz crackers.
Don't eat it. Disgusting.
Well, I did peanut butter and celery, so that was kind of healthy, I think. But, you know, the women were dressed, a lot of them were dressed in leopard skin outfits, and everybody had candy cigarettes. It looked like a room full of smokers, but it was no real smokers involved. So that's two of my best things for the week. Now, segueing, something that's really catching my attention for the last 6 months to a year is the evolution of YouTube. And I just think YouTube is amazing.
It's really entertaining.
And for those of you taking notes, look up the Leningrad Cowboys with the Red Army Choir singing Sweet Home Alabama. That's a great one. And there's another one with the Chinese orchestra playing Smoke on the Water by Deep Purple. And then I got 100 of them. I think what I'm thinking is, and if anybody wants to send us an email, let us know what you think. I'd like to do a show on YouTube one of these evenings. Everybody's in front of a computer anyway. So you guys, you can email us your favorite YouTube videos, and we can just spend the evening watching YouTube.
We would love it. You send in your little videos, and we'll talk about it. We'll give you a critique. We'll be like that show, that Simon fellow. We'll give you the give you the hook.
Oh, yeah. I don't know if you've seen the one with the British cellular cell phone salesman. Guy worked in a cell phone store.
Oh, the singer. That is still going around, huh?
Yeah,
singing Ness and Dorma. That is the most touching thing.
So you can email matt@mattkramer.com your best YouTube video ideas.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm bringing that up because when Jan came in, I showed her on YouTube the seminal event that introduced me to tonight's guest 20 years ago. It was 1988. I ran a club in Santa Monica called At My Place. And a record label contacted me and said, we want to do a record release party for Brenda Russell. And Brenda Russell is just a fantastic singer. And if you were to put Brenda Russell into YouTube and look for a song called Get There, I played that early tonight, and that just made me actually feel pretty emotional. She's a wonderful singer. It's a great song. And at that party was the night I met tonight's guest, Terry Daniel. And Terry's been through an amazing kind of professional career. Public relations person and consultant. She's an author, a couple of books, and one was called When Good People Throw Bad Parties. I even have a chapter in that book.
We've never done that, though, Matt.
And then another. Well, no, I learned from Terry, so I don't have to throw bad parties.
Good job.
And then there's Power Schmoozing, which definitely came out of, you know, the music industry. You know, you got to schmooze and get to know people. That was a really good book that she wrote. And at one point, she was the she was promoting Jamaica for the travel industry. So the poor thing, she had to keep going to Jamaica on business and
That's
get free travel and airfare and things like that. But then she went into a more domestic realm. I remember when she adopted a little boy named Danny, a little baby, and watching that baby grow up. And then I think now maybe is the time to bring Terry on. And one, you can correct any of my misconceptions, and Terry, say hello.
Hello. Wow, you make me sound so exciting. And it wasn't 1988. It was 83.
Oh, okay. I think the song was released in 88. I saw that on...
Yeah, you know, it wasn't released until afterwards because she was still writing for other people and wasn't... It was just beginning to do her own stuff, but I was sitting here calculating, remembering my boyfriend at the time.
Oh, yeah.
Which is how I marked.
That's a marker.
You know, yeah, it's a marker, exactly. And I figured, no, it wasn't 88. Definitely not.
Okay, so it's 25 years we've known each other.
Yes, 25 years.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's a history.
And I saw that Leningrad Cowboys thing on YouTube. Did you send that to me?
I think I did.
That was hysterical. I'm so glad you're telling people to look at it because it's definitely worth looking at.
One of the things that kind of I kind of wonder about, because in that Red Army choir that's singing Sweet Home Alabama, some guys look like they're in their 50s and 60s. They were probably in the military during the Cold War doing some action.
Yeah, they probably were.
It might have been Afghanistan, et cetera.
Wow. And why did they pick that song?
That's, I want to know. I want to know the truth.
We want to know why.
Minds want to know that.
So what do you want us to know about you, Terry?
Well, I was listening to you talk about the best and worst things, and I thought that would be a really interesting segue to talk about what I'm into these days. I was listening to that and thinking, okay, what were the best and worst things that have ever happened to me? And my thinking has changed so much that there are no worst things.
Yes.
There are no worst things.
Lessons, right?
Exactly. That's exactly right. So if you think of the worst imaginable thing that can happen, which would be probably one's child dying, which has happened to me, with a shift in awareness and a different way of looking at it, it is the best thing.
A gift.
And so if somebody asked me what's the worst thing that ever happened to you, I couldn't even come up with an answer. I might say, well, that was the hardest lesson, or that was the hardest thing to release. But I don't think I could ever say that there was a worse thing. So I guess I've learned a few things over the years.
And given some of the journeys you've been through, I mean, I think I've helped you cry through a couple of those boyfriends.
At least two.
That's a good friend.
Yeah. So what are some of the best things?
Well, I guess the best thing, the single most best thing, would certainly be being a mother. I guess everybody would say that. And even though my son was severely disabled and very sick and had a life-threatening illness, the experience of going through that with him was the highest thing I could have ever imagined for myself. It turned me into the person that I would like to think I am. I got to see all the really best parts of myself, the selfless parts, the unconditional love capability, things that I never gave myself credit for having. And that's one way to get in that place very fast. And people our age, a lot of us have taken care of parents who are sick, and we've been through that. And doesn't that just completely transform you?
So you found how deeply resourceful you were by this child. Do you want to tell the listeners just a little bit more? I was reading on the website. It is quite an amazing story of his death and then what happened after that.
Well, I've always been an intuitive, I wouldn't call myself a psychic, but I always read tarot cards and things like that and had a little bit of intuitive sense. And about 3 years before he died, well, let me back up. He was perfectly normal until he was about 8. And when he was 10, he was diagnosed with this rare disorder, and they told me he'd have 5 to 10 years to live. So I was quite prepared for the fact that he was going to die, and it was a degenerative illness, so he was losing his functioning and capabilities gradually over the years. Matt remembers this because he was there for all of that. And about the last 3 years of his life, I started to do a lot of meditation, a lot of metaphysical study, and I really kind of raised my intuition to a higher level. And interestingly, as my son was losing the ability to speak, which was part of what happens with the disease, I was increasing my ability to hear telepathically. And I didn't know at the time that it was kind of in preparation for being able to hear from him from the other side after he died. I had no idea that was going to happen. But during the last, 6 months or so of his life, I had some readings with psychics and tuned into it in a number of ways and got a very clear impression that we would be writing a book together, which is exactly what we did.
So you were being prepared for the communication to come after his passing.
Yes. Absolutely.
So did you believe in after-death communication, reincarnation, spirit guide, soul contracts before you began communicating with your son on the other side? I mean, before all this happened, was this something new and different and shocking to you? Or
not at all. I love this question because I've always been into this way of looking at things, spiritual, metaphysical. I read the Tibetan Book of the Dead when I was 19.
Oh, my, that's so early.
I've always been a seeker. So this sort of fit with my thinking. And when he was diagnosed, people would say to me, oh, my God, now that you know that your little boy is going to die, does this change the way you look at things? Are you going to find a traditional God now and go to church or something? And I said, absolutely not. If anything, it reinforces what I have always resonated with and always known to be true.
Mm-hmm.
So I did always think this way, and I taught him to think this way as well, because I would talk to him when he was very little about his disease and that he was probably not going to live long, and I taught him how to meditate.
Oh,
and
my.
Do visualizations, and so I think we were working on it even in the physical world together.
It sounds as if he was a team. I also had a daughter who had a severe, severe disorder, and when she was 4, they did a reading on her, and they said, she is your master teacher.
Oh, yes.
Did you ever have a sense that your child was helping you walk through your going through the portal, the initiatory experience, did you?
Always. I mean, everybody's a teacher to everybody else. Our children are particularly teachers. And as you know, disabled children, autistic, Down syndrome,
mm-hmm.
all of those are the most special beings that walk among us.
Mm-hmm. Well, they certainly take you deep to the level of your deepest compassion and patience.
Mm-hmm.
And perseverance, which are not qualities that are that the normal parents that come naturally in our busy society. Now, another element I wanted to talk to you about is the marriage that was the background of caring for this special child. In your book, you talk about the backprop for much of the story. There's a stormy marriage with your ex-husband, and that must have been difficult to have that be a part of the whole picture and the energy of guilt with your child. So has your son helped you deal with some of this guilt? Have you had some communications about that aspect of what was occurring during
yes,
that time?
Yes, that's such a good question. Thank you for asking that. I still struggle with guilt about it, even though my son tells me all the time, he reassures me that, you know, this was the contract and this was the plan and everything was as it should be. The interesting thing about it is this man was my third husband. He showed up in my life literally within a couple of weeks of my son starting to show symptoms. And it was as if my son's little soul looked at this man's soul and said, good, you've arrived. I've been waiting for you. Now we can get this party started. Let's get to work. We've got a lot to do here.
Oh, my.
And from that day till the day I left this marriage was 10 years,
mm-hmm.
and it was exactly the same 10 years from when Danny got sick to when Danny died. So it was bracketed. It was like mm-hmm. this man walked into our life, stayed for 10 years to go through this process, and then we all went our separate ways.
That's a soul contract.
Oh, so much so.
Absolutely.
So clearly.
So I imagine that there were just different give and takes there that enabled all the processes to happen. But how lucky you are to have these communications to ease your guilt so many times with divorce. The children aren't able to articulate that. In fact, you have his soul on the other side full of wisdom now that can really speak from a high level of truth for you.
Well, you know, it's funny because the other day, long story, I had to give my dog away, and I gave him away to a wonderful home where he's running around on 14 fenced acres with 6 dogs, and I felt so guilty driving away and seeing his little face looking through the gate in the rearview mirror, and I had this terrible guilt attack, and it pushed all my buttons about my son, and I drove home crying and thinking, how could I have put my son through 10 years of that horrible marriage when he was so sick, and I moved him from California to Alabama. I did this, I did that, and I just started beating myself up and spiraling down into that guilt place. And I was telling a friend of mine about this experience, and she looked at me quite calmly and said, well, then you must not really believe what your son tells you from the other side.
Uh-huh.
And it just nailed me. Mm-hmm. And I said, well, Judy, I totally believe what Danny tells me, but as long as I'm here on Earth in a body and still have an ego, I am going to struggle with these human chains. Because
that's
what I'm here to
mother. That's the mothering thing of wanting to give our child the perfect picture, which in fact wasn't meant to be, I imagine.
No, even though he talks to me from the other side very clearly in long, articulate pages of words and talks to me about this frequently, in a way, I'm still not buying it. You know, I mean, I know what he's saying is the truth, but I have to go through the process of releasing the guilt. He, just because I have a great buddy on the other side helping me, he can't speed it up and he can't do it for me. I have to go through every little tweak of every little step on my own.
It's like the grieving process, right?
Yes.
Can you share some of the surprising things you've learned from Danny?
Well, in the chapter about our family relationships, my marriage, there's a little quote at the beginning of the chapter, and I thought I would read that. It really explains that whole soul contract thing. Danny says, "The souls in every family choose one another equally, and the experiences they share are magnificent, perfect manifestations of the plan made by each soul for its growth. With each experience, everybody has a chance to transform habits, responses, behaviors, beliefs, and energy patterns. This is how family groups are supposed to function, which is why there can be no such thing as a dysfunctional family."
That's great. That sounds like Eckhart Tolle.
It's pretty amazing. And
that's so beautifully put.
Would you say that comes from an entity that's older than 16 years?
Oh, yes. Absolutely.
Well, how has the book been received?
How has it been received? People love it. I mean, I get, you know, fan mail, I guess you could say, you know, from people all over the place, and they're finding it slowly but surely. And every time I go out into the world, and this is such an interesting thing, this was even true while Danny was alive, it's like a magnet, and it attracts people who tell me that they lost a child as well.
Mm-hmm.
And it also brings people out of the closet with their metaphysical beliefs.
Excellent.
Yeah, people will come to me and say, well, you know, I never really could put into words how I believed about these things until I read your book, and I never could talk about it with other people because they think I was crazy, but your book sort of gave me permission to do that.
Most people yearn to talk to their loved ones on the other side, and some do and are afraid to talk about it. They'll think they're crazy. What advice can you give to a person who sincerely wants to, for the highest reasons, to make a contact with a loved one who's passed over?
My advice is it's much easier than you think it is. And I actually teach classes in how to do this, and I give people a really simple exercise. If you write a letter to yourself from the person on the other side, let's say it's your mother, and your mother, you start writing, "Dear Jen," and you'll just start writing, and it'll feel like it's coming from yourself. It'll say all the things you expect her to say. "I love you. You did a wonderful job taking care of me. Say hello to your brother," you know, whatever. But as you keep writing, and it might take more than one attempt,
mm-hmm.
you will feel a shift in the energy, and all of a sudden it won't feel like you talking anymore.
So just make the movement as if. And then it
mm-hmm.
will become, by making the intention and asking, it will be realized.
It's by making the intention and raising your frequency.
Ah, that's just the word I was going to say. that's our show here. It really, thoughts are frequencies, and it's a channel.
Yes.
So it's almost like looking at a clock and saying, okay, my son's frequency is at 3, and moving something is so subtle in your brain that do you find that, how does it feel when you talk to your son? Is there like a channel that, like you're an antenna? Like
yeah, it's funny because I talk to him in a lot of different ways. Sometimes I can just call for him and he'll show up because he's always there because there's no time
mm-hmm.
outside of the body, so it's not like I have to call and wait, you know. And sometimes I can literally feel him in my body. My body will feel different. there is a subtle shift in energy, but it isn't always that way. Sometimes it's really casual. I could just be walking through the grocery store, and I'll hear him.
Well, let me ask you this. Now, I've heard different things. Of course, I haven't been there in this lifetime to really cognize it. But if your son has passed over and he's staying here communicating regularly, is there a place that he has not moved on to? Is he staying with you till the communications are finished, till something is healed? Or is he living in two parallel? Has he explained that aspect to you?
Actually, he has, because somebody asked me the other day, what if he incarnates somewhere? Would I stop hearing from him? And I thought that was a mind-blowing question.
Yeah.
And I tuned in and I asked Danny, and he said, basically, because time isn't linear, and because souls can communicate with each other all the time, healing is done soul to soul. So, Jan, if you were doing a healing on me, you would tap into my soul if I was sitting next to you or if I was in another country. And Danny, actually, there's a whole chapter in the book where he teaches how to do this, that you can actually summon somebody's soul to you to do healing work with it, with their permission.
Yes, it's quantum.
Yes, exactly.
And the permission part is very important.
Right. And
that's
so
why prayer is so powerful.
Exactly. It's exactly how prayer works. So if Danny's incarnated somewhere on the planet, his soul and my soul can still talk to each other.
So I'm imagining somebody changing the diaper of a one-year-old baby, and then the soul of that baby is telling somebody else how to deal with their marriage or their transition in life.
Well, that's interesting. And when you look at babies, you never really know what's going on in their minds. You know, they could be anywhere.
I'd like to just say something very quickly to the listeners tonight, is that to say a prayer or a wish for someone, you're completely clear and you create no karma. If you ask for their angels to do the healing, if it's in the right time and place, sometimes we get a little busy about that. But obviously with Terry and her son, it's all very, the clarity there and the communication is appropriate and beautiful.
Well, the soul has to intend healing. And, you know, there's a little part in the book where Danny explains to me how healing is done. He shows me a lot of little locations and locales, and he shows me this place called the Healing Courtyard. And he says, here is a man who is sick, and I have brought his soul here. And we are having a conference, and we're talking about how his soul is working through its plan, what it's choosing to do, if it's ignored anything or skipped anything or wants to go back over something, and what would it like to do according to its plan right now. And it can choose to go back into the body and heal or die or stay sick or whatever. And a soul that is really seeking growth, a human that is conscious about being on a growth path, can do a meditation like that where you can have a conversation with your soul about what would you like to do now?
Mm-hmm.
You want to still have cancer, or do you want to move on, do something else?
So the choosing itself creates the energy for the healing, or is there some process intermediated by another higher being? Or is it?
I think that it's always kind of a communal effort.
Mm-hmm.
It's co-creation, and the higher being is just the energy of light, which is God,
mm-hmm.
and guides, and everybody. You know, Danny sort of shows it to me as everybody has kind of a council that they work with. And you were asking me if Danny was held back from moving on somewhere else by
mm-hmm.
talking to me.
Mm-hmm.
His choice right now is to be a healer from heaven. And that was his choice when he came in the body he had, in the situation he had.
Mm-hmm.
This was, you know, a project that his soul was doing in this incarnation. So, you know, not everybody moves completely away from Earth when they're out of the body. Some people can choose to stay and be a guide.
Great information.
He also told me something you'll love. The other day I was asking him this because I'm very busy all day long, and sometimes I can feel him calling me and wanting to talk to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm too busy, I won't sit down and meditate, I won't sit down and write, and I can hear myself saying, not now, Danny, I'll talk to you later. And I feel guilty about that, of course.
Well, that's a mother.
Yeah. So I sat down to talk to him, and, you know, I channel him in different ways. Lately, I've been doing it more by just writing. And I said, how do you feel about that? And he said, well, remember, there is no time where I am. So it's not like I'm standing here eager to talk to you and tapping my foot and being impatient. When there's no time, you can't be impatient. He said all the messages from heaven, and he calls it heaven, are being transmitted to us all the time. And we can just stop and tap in and pull one out whenever we're ready.
Now, I'm trying to wrap my brain around this. I'm thinking in terms of the time it takes for Danny to transmit an idea to you. That's a passage of time.
No, it's not. There is no time.
It's in the now.
Yeah.
It's all in this very now. Actually, some people are predicting with the end of the Mayan calendar that we will be going into a time and space, or there's no linear time, where there is this, everything is quantum. We are our divine beings right where Danny is right now. Has he given you any hints or pictures of these things to come?
This is so funny because everybody asked me this question about the Mayan calendar. And I have to tell you, Danny has a real sense of humor, and he can be kind of, I can't think of the word, flippant, I guess. I asked him this one day, and he said, the Mayan calendar ended when it ended because they had to end it somewhere. There is no time. It doesn't mean anything.
There's a lot of goddesses here in Sonoma County who can be very upset to hear that.
I know that. You know, what can I say? I'm just the messenger. That's what he said.
Well, it sounds like he is in a beautiful place, that we would like to bring more of that here.
Well, and that's the thing. It is here, of course. You know, we already have it. And, you know, the problem, the thing that causes human pain and suffering is that we have this idea that we're here and God or heaven or light or whatever you want to call it is somewhere else in another location. Mm-hmm. And the real truth and the real way to peace is to realize that there is no separation.
Exactly.
We are still of that light. We just happen to be poured into these forms called bodies right now because it's kind of fun to hop around on planets and have experiences. And the soul just has this insatiable desire for growth and expansion and experience. Mm-hmm. And the real truth is we're not disconnected from it. And it's a shame because religion told us that we were, Western religion, Western thinking.
Well, religion didn't tell us. Those who sought to control it told us.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. They rewrote all the books, the history, gave us
exactly
Bibles,
right,
etc.
Yeah. So, you know, here we were, these divine sparks, and for reasons that are, you know, a whole other topic we can't go into now, humans got hold of control and politicized it, and the way that you control people is you tell them that they're not divine.
Exactly.
And that this little group of people over here is divine and you're not, and so we're going to tell you how things are. And why this, you know, family of souls incarnated together here on Earth fell for a line like that is beyond my comprehension. Except that it was just, you know, the collective growth movement of the whole group, I suppose.
Well, it's leading me to some questions that I hope are not too self-serving. As you know, I'm working on a theory that I call predatory leadership, and it's based on a very small percentage of humanity which lacks elements of human capacity. They lack the ability to feel empathy. They lack the ability to feel any conscience for their actions. They lack the ability to take responsibility, and their sense of entitlement sort of enables them to do anything to become sort of the worst possible leaders, but we keep over and over again allowing the worst possible people to become our leaders. And so in terms of the concept of the soul's journeys and the cycles and the transitions to this plane and beyond, I'd want to know where what I'm calling the predatory leader fits in that game.
Well, this is a tough one, Matt, because when you're looking, there are, you know, obviously there are people like that who are damaged and so disconnected from the light that they have the characteristics that you describe, but they have a role in the story too, and they are necessary. And, you know, a kind of advanced way of looking at it is that there are no bad guys. There are no victims. There are no perpetrators. It's all soul contracts. Even the biggest, nastiest bad guys that you can think of
are part of... Well, we're talking genocide these days.
What's that?
We're talking genocide.
Oh, I know. I know.
Genocide. My grandmother always said the pendulum had to swing so far one side for all the people to see how it's gotten completely out of balance, and that even the sleepiest people have to wake up now.
Well, and genocide is also an agreement between or among soul groups.
Okay, well, I have to be honest.
I know, it's out there.
Okay, because from my... As I hear people talking in that way, they're saying, you know, it's ordained or it's a contract, etc., and I'm going... So that means I should stop trying to stop the pain, because can I do anything about it?
That's
or is this forgiving or a way to excuse myself from having to do anything about it?
It's a really interesting question. Somebody in one of my groups said the same thing the other day. And there is only one thing you can do about it. And it's to increase the amount of light around yourself and that you send out to the world.
That's exactly it. You just have to keep increasing your own frequencies so that you become a person that other people look at and say, what is it about that person, the wisdom, the light, and you change them, and then they change the people that they're giving
right.
light to, and that's what it is.
And it grows and grows, and the reason we have all this darkness is because of people doing the same thing with their energy in reverse.
Mm-hmm. By giving our energy to what's wrong and fighting against it, you're creating fighting.
That's so great. That's so great, Jan. That's exactly right. Marianne Williamson once said, today's thoughts are tomorrow's headlines. Mm-hmm. And what that means is if we have, you know, 20 million people walking around in fear, we're going to create so much fear that it's going to be in the newspaper tomorrow with car bombing.
Remember when they first came out with the whole thought of beyond war, and I thought it was some liberal menopausal women, that suddenly we were going to start, which I am now, so I can say that rather loosely, that they said, well, we just have to think peace. And I said, oh, that is so naive. But now we know activity, energy follows intention in every single case. So it just becomes a matter of, I've even thought this far out, that if we thought of Never Never Land, and we thought of the joy, the flying, the manifestation, we think those people never grow up. What if we made it safe for Peter Pan to come out, and we allowed this sort of, do you see what I'm saying?
I totally see what you're saying.
Yeah. We told Peter Pan, we have to give you a briefcase. We're going to put a ball and chain. We're
right.
going to, drain the blood out of you, the corporate.
But I believe all children deserve the opportunity to live in Peter Pan's world.
All adults.
Everybody, all children. I mean, we're all the same. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it's the whole thing is a collective. There is no them and us. There's only us.
Totally interconnected.
Yeah.
And those of us that feel so inclined need to take leadership by raising our frequencies, because we are that little pointed edge that is going to sear through the status quo and lift up and change and co-create with these higher thoughts and vision, or it won't happen. We collectively have created this room Matt and I are sitting in, your book, all of our experiences. We have to go from a higher frequency band.
You know, I just had a really funny thought. Could you imagine if every morning when Congress convenes, if they were led in a guided meditation of, and I have a meditation that I would love to do in front of Congress, which kind of, you know, plugs them in to the energy that we all are, and to kind of guide them through a meditation to see the oneness of everything. And there are plenty of meditations that do this. And if they spent 90 seconds every morning doing that meditation, how different the world would be in a year.
And then add some sound.
Yeah, the music definitely, some breathing, all of that. I mean, that's how easy it would be. And in answer, what do? You have me go to Washington and lead a meditation every morning.
I recommend that. And have them each take turns singing the signature songs from the different cultures.
Well, that would take up the whole day.
Oh.
Well, they'd have no time for war.
What a beautiful way to spend the day.
Yeah.
It would change everything so fast. It would change those energies and those thought forms. Wow.
Well, you know something? Somebody, should write a script that makes that movie that shows that reality.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We'll all do that in our spare time.
What a way to manifest it.
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, the connection of the Internet and writing books and the level of instant communication has increased our ability to make these changes. Now, today,
YouTube.
I don't know the name of it, but there is a whole new grid system which is much faster than the Internet, and it's going to be up soon. Have you heard the buzz?
You're talking about Internet 2.
Web 2.0.
Web 2, yeah.
Huge. It's almost like a massive world think.
Well, there's also a battle over it because industry wants to control that.
Of course, just like the Internet.
In thinking about, technology has brought great wonder and great pain, and there's this constant yin and yang evolution. And on one hand, if you go to a Bioneers event, if I go to a gathering of musicians, there's one called the Far West Folk Alliance, which is just, they take over an entire hotel, and there's just music everywhere. There is a spreading of the value of the independent being as opposed to the corporately controlled military-industrial environment. And there's also a polarization. As people become more empowered, those who seek to control also are becoming more empowered with the advance of technology, including the advance of psychological means of maintaining more control and power. So I kind of see it like taking a balloon and kind of twisting it so that it divides into two parts, and which one's going to pop first?
Metaphysically speaking, the Internet is just a very, very rough model of what we're capable of doing telepathically.
And I believe we're headed there, too, that it's actually just a third-dimensional model of what we're already doing.
Exactly.
Well, with you and your son, the frequencies. I had a little bird tapping on my window, and it started speaking sentences, and I was zeroing in on the frequencies, and I totally got this grid you're talking about. It's just amazing that we are not going to need it, and then we're out of the loop of control of the corporation money game when we're just doing it with our minds. But it's there. You're right. It is our divine right.
Well, as long as there are humans with egos on the planet and we're all evolved to different levels, there's always going to be a group of humans or a type that's going to want to take control of everything. That's what happened with religion. That's what happened with Jesus.
Mm-hmm. It's those predatory guys.
Yeah, well, it is those predatory guys, and they come in soul groups.
Mm-hmm.
And so, when the Internet came out, which was intended to be free and uncensored, mm-hmm. for everybody, look what it became, because there's always going to be somebody who's going to see the opportunity to use it to control people. And then it's, you have to pay to use this, and you can't say certain words or publish certain things. That's just part of the yin and yang. It's part of the balance of all of us here on the planet together.
Actually, if I could qualify that a little bit,
mm-hmm.
I believe that ARPA, A-R-P-A, was the original Internet, and it was for the defense community to communicate. But the college development, it spread beyond there, so the original, it did quickly overcome the original intent to become this out-of-control thing that some of us love and others are trying to control.
Well, it makes me just be grateful for the blessing of this alternative radio station where we can sit here and pretty much say what we want thanks to Seth and Dawn, BBS Radio. We are able to express our minds uncensored. Thank you.
Well, on one hand, freedom of the press belongs to those who own the press.
Yeah, Dawn and Seth, I think they have a couple rules in there, but they're really cool guys.
And, you know, thank you is another really important thing. I just want to jump on that for a second.
Mm-hmm.
You know, not only could Congress sit and meditate on their connectedness in the light every day, but if they could just, if everybody could just stop when, and say thank you, gratitude is the key. You know, gratitude is what gets you there.
I would like to say that what you described in terms of, you know, Congress starting off with a meditation on connectedness, I believe that's how the American Indians held all of their meetings and their gatherings.
Oh, sure. Well, all of us spiritual people do. I open all my meetings with something like that.
Well, I like to do it, too, here on the show. And I usually when I have sound guests, we do that. Matt always kind of looks at me a little cross-eyed for a while. But I think it's important. Ritual is important and sound. And also, I want to say our guest tonight is Terry Daniels. We're live from Ordinary Miracles. Terry, how can people contact you or find out more about you?
Best way is through my website, which is swaninheaven.com. The name of my book is A Swan in Heaven, and the website is just www.swaninheaven.com.
Mm-hmm. Now, I see swaninheaven.net on one of the, but you have .com as well.
No, you might be thinking of my... DanielDirect.net, which
I'm
is my
seeing,
email.
On the one of the ones you yeah, DanielDirect, swaninheaven.net.
Oops. Mm-hmm. That's an error, folks.
Okay. And
well,
let me say it's Terry Daniel with no S.
Right, two first names.
Okay, we're coming near the end of our hour. We probably could talk for another 10 hours.
Yeah, we've covered a lot of ground. You're quite articulate in all these different areas.
Thank
and
you.
I'm so pleased that you're able to share this, you know, beyond the world's experience to teach. And
you
I
know,
Jan,
as a sound person, you'll love this idea. This was something that came up with a bunch of people in a group years ago to thinking of outrageous ways to enlighten people. Having the dial tone on your phone say, Om.
Oh, no. We've got better than that. My partner, Randy Masters, he's making ancient biblical codes turned into music be dial tones on cell phones.
Oh, great. Oh,
and
that good.
Will actually be have codes open in them, like to the Kabbalah.
Oh, my goodness,
yeah.
That's great.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be really great if a bill collector is calling you up and suddenly gets spiritual.
Well, that's a good way to end. It's very positive, and I'm happy to say I never did say my negative thing this week, which I had decided privately not to say anything negative again. Thanks to our wonderful guest tonight, Terry Daniels.
Thank you, you too. This was great.
Daniel, thank you for joining us tonight. We'll have you back again soon.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
Give it to me. If
resist. You're a terrorist, see. I'll take everything you got, my way of setting you free. They quell objectioners, they kill the messengers. They quell objectioners, they kill the messengers up against the wall. And they call this living on earth. 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 The rich get richer, making more war. Richer and richer, making more poor. An eye for an eye, but turn the other cheek. As long as nothing interferes, nothing better stops a 40-hour week. Lies and misdirection are all the same.
Lies and misdirection are all the same.
Lies and misdirection are all your best.
Lies and misdirection,
they work you till you're dead. And they call this living on earth. They call this living on earth. They call this living on earth. They call this living on earth.
BBSRadio.com. Don't forget to tune in to The Infinite Consciousness with Eva Herr every Sunday at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Enjoy.